Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode SP35, the 2013 Spring Equinox Show, Part 1. Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. If you'd like to send us a message or some feedback, drop us a line at garyandruth@celticmythpodshow.com. Or come along and have a look at all the things we've got available for you on our website at celticmythpodshow.com.
Some good stuff. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter as well. All of the details will be found in our show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.
And if you haven't come along to see us on our Facebook page, please do. We have lots of articles, pictures and all sorts of things that are fascinating to anybody interested in Celts and Celtic mythology.
Yeah, it's true. Ruthie spends a lot of time there.
So, welcome to the holiday special for Spring Equinox, or Astara, for 2013. Okay, so what have we got in this show?
Well, this show is a monster. An enormous, hulking brute of sheer Celtic goodness.
Oh dear, that was a bit over the top, wasn't it?
You think?
Okay, so what exactly are you on about?
Well, okay. It's actually so big, we've decided to split it into two parts.
Oh, I see. Right, okay. So what have we got in the first part?
Well, we've got four super songs for you and three other fantastic pieces, including a wonderful piece by a resident bard, a very special story, and a piece about the equinox at Lochru.
Lochru? That's in Ireland, isn't it? What's that?
Yes, you're right. It is in Ireland, and it's an ancient passage tomb that's aligned to the spring equinox.
Well, that sounds brilliant. Oh, and the special story you're talking about. What's so special about it?
Well, this is a fascinating Arthurian tale that's been submitted to us by a listener, and he's recorded his own lines to go with it.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that's a first for us, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Okay, so I'm looking forward to that already.
Yeah.
So what's in the Spring Equinox Part 2, then?
In Part 2, we've got yet another great story. Some more fascinating information about the fairies.
Ooh, fairies, I like
yes.
fairies.
Yes. And the trickster for the spring equinox. And that show will be out shortly after this one.
Excellent. That sounds brilliant. Right, will you win? That really is a monster of a show. So we'd better crack on with it. Have we got any news and views?
Yes, we have.
We'd like to start by saying a massive, massive thank you to all you wonderful people for sending healing and prayers and positive energy to help our little granddaughter Amelia with healing after her terrible accident. She's now recovering really, really well and is back at home with mum and dad. And in fact, today was her first full day at school.
It was, wasn't it?
It certainly was. She's still being kept an eye on very closely, but we're really, really happy with that recovery. Exactly what we wanted. Thank you so much.
Yes, we're amazed at the speed of her recovery from what was a life-threatening accident after falling down some stairs. And we believe that your good wishes help the wonderful doctors and nurses and all of us achieve an amazing healing. Thank you so very, very much.
Yes, thank you so much. And we're very, very grateful and blessed to have our little girl back with us again.
We are. And I think it's time we spread some of our joy back to you and got on with the show.
Yes. So let's start with some fantastic music from the amazing Australian band Spiral Dance, reminding us whilst the spring equinox is upon us here, the autumn equinox is with our friends down under.
Great.
Hi guys, we're missing you.
We are. Yep, that's a great idea. And no better way to celebrate it. A very happy autumnal equinox to you all in the Southern Hemisphere. Courtesy of Adrienne and the other guys in Spiral Dance with their wonderful track, Into the Green.
Thank you. winter nights have been so cold and long, blows through the willows and taunts us with her icy song. I hide in my pillows, keep my nose from the cold night air, but out by the willows I know the sign of spring is almost there. Where are you? Where are you? Where have you gone, Jack in the green? I'll find you, I'll find you, I'll seek you out where the winter's been. Look for you, look for you, hiding out in the summer land. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you, Jack? Beneath the willows I watch the clouds in the summer sky. Beneath the willows I'll dream to where the green man lies. There I will follow along the path of his leafy feet. I am the willow, and I'm dancing in fields of meadow sweet. Where are you? Where are you? Where have you gone, Jack in the green? I'll find you, I'll find you, I'll seek you out where the winter's been. Look for you, look for you, hiding out in the summer land. Where are you? Where are you? Where are you, Jack, my green man? Me under my pillow, I found the seed his love for me. Thank you.
that song. That was Into the Green by Spiral Dance from their superb album, The Quickening.
It's almost a love song for the green man in all seasons, don't you think?
I suppose it could be. And excellent for both the spring and autumn equinoxes, though. Check out the show notes for more details about the amazing Spiral Dance.
We must get some more of their albums. They're great. Okay, so tell me, what have we got coming up next?
Well, I found a fantastic website recently called Voices from the Dawn, which is building up an incredible collection of ancient Irish archaeological sites. And here's what makes it really special. It talks about all the folklore associated with each site.
Now, that's pretty impressive.
Oh, yes, it is. And he's got some of the history of the people that found the sites as well. And a really, really clever interactive map.
Oh, yes, I've seen that. And the little spirals on it show the sites that the website covers.
That's right, yeah. The red spirals show the web pages already done, and the brown spirals show those sites that will be covered soon.
Cool. I'll tell you what I've noticed as well. Each of the pages I've looked at so far have got a virtual reality tour of the ancient site as well. Incredible.
As I say, it's an amazing website and I think one of its kind. It's fabulous. I thought it would be good to see what they actually had to say about the folklore of Loch Rue in County Meath.
Okay, so why choose Loch Rue?
Well, for just under an hour, at the precise time of the spring equinox, the sunshine streams down the main passage of the passage tomb and lights up an ornately carved panel at the end of the tomb. The whole monument is perfectly aligned to the spring equinox.
Now, we don't often see evidence that the ancient peoples, well, the ancient Celts in particular, held the equinoxes as significant.
Exactly. Loch Rue is one of the exceptions that breaks that preconception. So let's have a listen.
Okay, sounds great.
All About the Hill of the Hag, from Voices of the Dawn.
The Dormund now her tomb to build, her ample skirt with stones she filled, and dropped a heap on Carn Moor, then stepped 1,000 yards to Law, and dropped another goodly heap, and then, with one prodigious leap, gained Carn Beg, and on its height displayed the wonders of her might. And when approached death's awful doom, her chair was placed within the womb of hills, whose tops with heather bloom.
That was written by Jonathan Swift around about 1720, about the Loch Rue Passage Tomb near Oldcastle, County Meath in Ireland. On his visit to the Loch Rue Hills, also called Slievna Cayley, the Hill of the Hag or Witch, Jonathan Swift was determined to collect local folklore. With a friend acting as a translator from the Irish, he heard tales of the monster woman who once ruled the area. The name of the ancient hag was Garavog, the local incarnation of Onkailach Vera, the Hag of Beara. As legend goes, she was attempting a magical feat requiring her to drop an apron full of stones on each of the three Loch Rue peaks, jumping from one to the next. Had she succeeded, she would have ruled over the whole of Ireland. She was able to drop her cairns of stones on the first two peaks, but missed her mark and fell to her death on her last leap. But as a result of her efforts, the three hills are crowned with a wonderful assortment of 5,000-year-old passage tombs in various states of preservation. Slievna Cayley constitutes a Neolithic necropolis, a passage tomb cemetery with some evidence of at least 30 tombs, the grandest concentration of such monuments in Ireland. Over the centuries, scores of others may have been destroyed, with no trace remaining. Today, many of the structures are present only in outline form. They're covering cairns, tons of stone, deemed fair game for construction projects before the site was taken under the protection of the state. Some of the remaining tombs contain lavishly decorated orthostats with engravings whose meanings have eluded archaeologists, inspired much earnest speculation. One ruined tomb, Cairn H, contains stunning evidence of its having acquired a new purpose sometime in the Iron Age. Hundreds of elaborate incised bone fragments in the Celtic Latin style were found. We've got an illustration for you in the show notes.
The Hag of Beara. The folk tales of the hoary figure of the ancient Hag of Beara may have had her origins in the Celtic goddess Bwi, the old Irish word for cow, and perhaps the origin of the other Irish sovereignty goddess, the River Boyne. The most striking feature on Coileach Beara was her unfathomably long lifespan. It was said of her, "She passed into 7 periods of youth, so that every husband used to pass the debt from her, of old age, so that her grandchildren and great-grandchildren were peoples and races.
3 great ages. The age of the yew tree, the age of the eagle, the age of Coileach Beara.
Legends of an Coileach Beara are not unique to the Lochrú Hills. She also figures prominently in the folklore of the passage tomb on the summit of Slieve Gullion, 64 kilometres 40 miles to the northeast, in County Armagh. The Hag of Beara stories originated in the Beara Peninsula of County Cork, where at Coola Bay, a natural rock is pointed out as her petrified face. Also in County Cork, the Labacalli Wedge tomb is said to be her burial site. As a sovereignty queen, she was given the personal names of Bwi or Digdi. In a very real sense, An Coileach Beara acted as an earth mother, a supernatural figure who was a fundamental creator and presider over the landscape. In addition to dropping cairns on mountaintops, she also was responsible for placing huge boulders in rivers and sculpting rock formations on hillsides. Her geotectonic powers extended to creating islands in the seas and transforming lakes into mountains. For An Coileach Beara, her longevity evokes a sense of awe, but also a sadness stemming from the fragility of old age.
"I am poor Coileach Beara. Many a wonder have I ever seen. I have seen Carn Bain, a lake, though it is now a mountain."
The powers of An Coileach Beara represent a striking alignment between our modern understanding of Earth's geological evolution and an ancient folk wisdom expressed metaphorically. The connection between geology and folklore also may be noted in modern popular culture.
By the time the ancient oral traditions of the hag were committed to writing, perhaps the beginning of the early 9th century, Coileach, from the old veiled one, came primarily to signify a woman religious, a nun. The medieval scribes who wrote down these local stories, in order to conform the tales to a patriarchal and Christian perspective, transformed this goddess of destruction and renewal into a pitiable old woman who finds her consolation in Christ. Some have suggested a connection between the dimly recalled powers of An Coileach Beara and the graphic depictions of female generative energy seen in the Síle na Gcaoi carvings found on the walls of some of the old churches, such as the Ballyvourney monastic site in County Cork. One story of Coileach Beara that demonstrates her residual powers and how they were delimited by the new belief system was expressed in a story collected by the Irish Folklore Commission. In this object lesson tale, the hag scolded her servant boy for going out to turn the hay, when she had used her ability to commune with nature to predict that it would be too wet for such work. The boy then responded in a patriarchal and dismissive tone.
"Believe not the scald crow nor the deer, and place no store by the word of a woman. Whether the sun rises early or late, the day that ensues will be as God disposes."
Perhaps the saddest and most evocative of all the texts associated with the Hag of Beara are the verses of the Lament of the Old Woman of Beara, dating in different forms from as early as the 9th century. It's been called one of the most remarkable poems which medieval Ireland produced. In this poem, Ancailleach Vera is a fabled creature of the distant past, once able to renew her power from the endless forces of nature, but now faced with the pitiful degradation afforded to old women in a new patriarchal society. Even though in some translations she is depicted as having gladly taken a nun's veil, she still mourns for the life and the youth she's left behind.
Now my hands, wrinkled to long bones, hang down dead, hands that locked kings of this land in loving. In the old days, my lost days. Oh, hands, wrinkled to long bones. Even at my odd hours of lust, I must tell young men, be gone should they come. I have no love. Not the old I envy. They die. But youth and monuments, both assailed as I am, and they still hold. Winter makes war with the waves. Today no king will come here, nor the lowest road walker. I expect no one today.
That translation was by Michael Hartnett in 1969, but there are many others, and you can find links in the original article on the Voices from the Dawn website. Let's find out now about the main monuments on the site and why they are so important at the time of the spring equinox. Carnbane East, or Cairn T, is the principal monument of the hill, sitting on its summit, the highest point in County Meath. Known as the Hag's Cairn, it features a treasure trove of megalithic art on its decorated orthostats, and 360-degree views over 18 counties from the top of the passage tomb. Some have observed that progressing deeper into the tomb's passage reveals increasingly complex megalithic art, with the most ornate decoration found on the underside of the capstone of the western recess, visible only by leaning into the space and peering upwards. The backstone is richly decorated and illuminated by the spring equinox sunrise in a magnificent 50-minute display, which you can explore in the two versions in the Visions from the Dawn virtual reality tour and in the video in our show notes.
The Hag's Chair, a curbstone within the northern periphery of Cairn T, is a massive block with imposing armrests carved from the stone. Its carvings, now much degraded, may be seen in the show notes. The earlier tales of Ancailleach Vera suggest that she sat on this chair and looked out over her domain. Local law states that a modern visitor seated on the chair will be granted a single wish. Carnbane West, also known as Cairn Age, was found to contain hundreds of bone fragments later dated to the Iron Age, some 500 of which were incised with compass-drawn Latin style designs. It may be that these decorated bone flakes were placed into the passage tomb some 3,000 years after its construction, as votive offerings to its long-forgotten but still respected spiritual powers.
That was really fascinating.
Yes, I enjoyed it too. Interesting as well. But how about going back in time to the wild woodlands with our next piece of music?
Okay, sounds good. What did you have in mind?
Let's have a listen to the wonderfully evocative Brock with their track Call of the Wildwoods.
Oh,
birds call to me. Misty breath in the night, swift and fleet of foot, ghosting across the land. Comes the call that I will not deny. I must go, I must fly. To the summons I cannot deny. To me, wild words are part of my heart. Calling out to me, joy spirits never apart. Laughter scorns at the fear. At the rush as I step silent in the moonlight, laughter scorns at the fear. Faith pattering on the leaves, beats a rhythm that keeps me alive. He is near, he is here. Blood runs hot in my veins, I'm alive.
Calling out to me, wild words are part of my heart. To me, joy spirits never apart.
with their track Call of the Wildwoods from their powerful album 13 Moons.
I do like Brock. Mm-hmm. They're just the right mixture of folk drama and mythic music, don't you think?
Yes, they really are. Yeah. They're great, aren't they?
I think we should be hearing more from them in the future. Don't forget to check them out in the show notes for this episode.
Definitely. But right now, I'd like to hear a piece from our resident bard, Chris Jolliffe. Have we got one?
Oh, yeah. Of course we have. Have a listen to his wonderful Yostra story called Ostara's Hair.
Ostara's Hair by Chris Jolliffe.
Life stirs, and under the new sun of the coming year, the grass grows green and fresh from the awakened ground. The starkness of winter is stirred, and the wise may see the green man peering from the leaves of bushes throughout the land. Across all the wide world, the sacred earth breathes once more, and life returns. But beneath the rowan tree, clad in new finery, but yet to wear the white of May, winter leaves his last victory to linger. Beneath the lapwing's nest, new laden with eggs, the bones of a hare lie mingled with the mould of autumn's falling. Here he lay in retreat, until the chill claimed him in the dark and the cold. Death comes, and even the quickest foot may not outrace his hunting. The day ends, last touch of the sun, and night falls, the red sky fading into the black cloak of the night. The first stars appear, and the pale moon shines like a silver coin to bless the land. It is Ostara's Eve, and the world's breath is held. Waiting, she walks the new earth, white in the long shadows, by the pastures, the fields, by the bright brook bubbling. She's searching, searching, looking for her companion. Her gaze beholds the rowan tree, perceives the lapwing's eggs, stone grey and black, and searching, finds the new-grown grass, where the hare lies still, still, in the deep repose of the dead. He cannot rise to greet her as so often he did before, running upon the heath at the goddess's side to mark the new-grown earth with his tracks. For his last race is done, and only his bones remain. But Ostara shall not be denied this night, nor walk the world without her chosen. She calls, summoning her mate by law and love.
My precious one, my dear, rise up, my swift companion. Come back to me tonight, for the grass is soft and verdant, and waits our feet to bless the land with life. Recall your youth, the quick beat of your heart, the wind no swifter than your passing, that carries news from afar to your all-hearing ears, and stirs your pelt like the touch of my hand. See and feel and taste once more the freshness of the land. Come back, my joyful heart, come back to me, my own beloved one, and run with me once more.
And by the lapwing's nest, the soil stirs, shivers, and breaks open, and with a great spring, a form breaks free, pure white beneath the moon. His paws beat the earth like a drum as he runs, quick as an arrow from a bow. The white hare, answering his goddess's call. Spring returns, Ostara's blessing, the earth quickening beneath their feet, rejoicing in leaf and blade and bud, in lamb and foal and calf and cub, in egg and grub and eyes too young to open to the sky. And so the equinox begins. And with the rising sun, the world awakes to sweeter skies and the first breath of the spring. Ostara's hair has run his course. The ritual of the year is made, and the great wheel may turn once more.
And so Ostara's blessings fall upon each heart that stirs beneath the sun, and all who love the land and hear the call shall fruitful be, bound fast by life as one.
That was beautiful, Chris. Thank you. You've reminded us of the link between the hare, the goddess and the equinox brilliantly.
And most importantly, of the magic that lies in the spaces between the light and the dark, something that was always important to the Celts.
Time for some more music?
Definitely. Something that reminds us where that light came from, I think.
What did you have in mind?
Well, have a listen to Bridget's Flame by Kellyanna.
I am the spark before the fire, from winter's cold I do inspire. I am the promise of the spring, I am the tiniest of flames. A dancing fire upon the snow, in darkest night a mighty glow. I circle toward the coming spring, I am all life awakening. Midwinter slumber I do shake, I coax the seed and bulb to wake. I pull them slowly from their dreams, I am the maiden of the flame. Protecting all at time of birth, in love and safety draw them forth. I wrap all newborns in my light, I am the maiden dressed in white. I am the spark before the fire, from winter's cold I do inspire. I am the promise of the spring, I am the tiniest of flames. A dancing fire upon the snow, in darkest night a mighty glow. I circle toward the coming spring, I am all life awakening. Midwinter slumber I do shake, I coax the seed and bulb to wake. I pull them slowly from their dreams, I am the maiden of the flame. Protecting all at time of birth, in love and safety draw them forth. I wrap all newborns in my light, I am the maiden dressed in white. I am the spark before the fire, from winter's cold I do inspire. I am the promise of the spring, I am the tiniest of flames. A dancing fire upon the snow, in darkest night a mighty glow. I circle toward the coming spring, I am all life awakening. Midwinter slumber I do shake, I coax the seed and bulb to wake. I pull them slowly from their dreams, I am the maiden of the flame. Protecting all at time of birth, in love and safety draw them forth. I wrap all newborns in my light, I am the maiden dressed in white. I am the spark before the fire, from winter's cold I do inspire. I am the promise of the spring, I am the tiniest of flames.
That was Kellyanna with her superb track Bridget's Flame from the album Elemental.
Beautiful. And I see what you mean as well. From the tiniest of flames at Imolc to the full blooming of the light at spring now. Superb stuff. And wasn't that track gorgeous?
Oh yes, Kellyanna has an amazing talent. A superb mistress of sacred chant. Do make sure you check her out in the show notes.
Absolutely. Excellent.
Now, what was that you were telling me about a story sent in by one of our listeners?
Yes. Well, this is a short story written by Zachary Hare, who's been a show listener since the beginning, over 5 years ago.
5 years? Do you mean we've actually been going for 5 years now?
Yeah, that's right. Doesn't seem like it, does it?
No, it doesn't. Okay, so tell us about Zach's story.
Okay. Well, this is a tale of the young Arthur before he became the protector of Avalon, and tells of an unexpected encounter on the road after a particularly fierce battle, at a time when he's accompanied by the beautiful and enigmatic Lady Boiron, Princess of the Dark She.
Ooh, sounds interesting.
The Hero of Avalon by Zachary Hare. The battle had been long and hard going, with many casualties taken on both sides, but the day had eventually gone to Arthur, the future protector of Avalon. He'd fought hard at the side of his closest knights. He'd even been accompanied on every step forward into the blood and mire by the beautiful and mysterious Lady Boiron. The Princess of the Dark She, Lady Moda Ole Boiron, was robed in glimmering samite and black velvet, and she had raven black hair and skin as white as alabaster, with deep dark eyes that had seen many ancient mysteries. Footsore and weary, they'd won the day and were riding slowly home when they all heard the sound of hooves thundering towards them from just over the crest of a hill ahead of them. Arthur called a halt, and they readied themselves for yet another battle, as they all turned to face the troop of warriors that crested the hill before them, and bore down on them at a furious pace, their cloaks and banners whipping in the wind. The keen eyes of the She Princess picked out the sigils on the banners and the devices on the shields long before the mortals could identify them, and she nudged Arthur to point them out. As he saw them approach, he too realized that these were allies from a far and distant kingdom. He called his men to rest and waited for the foreign knights to approach. They did so at speed, stopping in front of Arthur and his men in a cloud of dust and stomping hooves. As the noise and dust settled, the Lady Boiron recognized the lead knight. She nudged her horse to take a pace forward and addressed him.
What is the meaning of this aggressive greeting?
I wish we were seeing each other again under more pleasant circumstances, milady, but I come at the request of my king. It appears that you, Arthur, have been accused of crimes against his realm.
What? This is insane. I have never even been to that part of the land. How could I commit crimes against a people I've never even met?
Nevertheless, these crimes are rather serious in their nature. We cannot take it on your word alone that they never occurred. To refuse this royal summons would be considered an insult to us. As you've become a representative of the Fae, it could lead to us going to war with them because of it. I'm sure you'll understand how delicate this situation is.
Arthur did indeed understand how dangerous rumour and false report could be, and how the fragile bonds between the mortal kingdoms and the Fae realms could easily be broken by such a lack of trust. He knew that he couldn't risk such trouble for the Fae people that had accepted him and that he had come to care about. So he agreed to answer the royal summons and go with his warriors to see their king and right whatever misrepresentations had been made. He agreed that his friends and the princess would wait at an outpost with some of the knights as hostage for his good behaviour until the matter was settled. Two knights rode forward to place chains upon his arms, and Arthur looked up with questions in his eyes. Surely his word and his bondsman were promises strong enough? The company's leader turned to Arthur.
Do not worry. These are just a precaution and a sign of your compliance. They will be removed as soon as we reach our destination.
Then they placed the chains carefully around Arthur as he sat in some confusion upon his horse. At a word, the two groups split off, heading to their respective locations, his friends and the Lady Boiron soon riding out of sight. He rode wearily with these strange knights, searching his memory for all of the dealings that he and his court had had with his kingdom. And yet, he could bring nothing to mind that would explain the offence their king had taken. Soon the heathland they had been riding over turned to steeper hills and valleys. and Arthur began to sense that something was deeply wrong. Seeing pictures of ancient maps in the castle's scriptorium, he suddenly remembered that he had seen the banner that these knights bore in flat, forested land, and not amongst hills. They were not going to that land. He span about in his saddle to face the knight giving the orders to these warriors.
What is going on here? Where are you taking me? I thought I was going to your king to be judged.
Oh, we're taking you to be judged, all right, but not by who you thought.
The air shimmered around them all, and with the sharp flash of multicoloured light, whatever glamour was on these knights disappeared, and Arthur saw them as they truly were. And then he knew, with a sickening feeling in the pit of his stomach, by the true colours and devices on their pennants, that these men were the knights and guardsmen of Yoden. Yoden, the king that men justly named Yoden the Cruel. The knight was smiling at Arthur, smiling with the look of sheer satisfaction at the look of betrayal and pain that had etched itself onto his face.
It's amazing what a simple cloaking spell can do.
He paused, taking obvious joy in the pain spreading across Arthur's face, as the full realization of his predicament sunk in.
Well, obviously you know whom we serve, and by now the truth has been revealed to your friends as well, who are, no doubt, already imprisoned.
Why would you do this? I know Yoden is no friend of mine, but that is far from him attacking me and committing an outright act of war against the Fae.
Oh, don't you worry about any of that. Soon you'll be dead, and the reaction of the Fae will be insignificant.
Leaving Arthur to puzzle over the meaning of his words, they rode on in silence, eventually heading onwards into a deep, dark gorge. Rare was it for sunlight to enter this dark crevice, and Arthur could see that at its very end lay the craggy opening to a huge, moss-overgrown cave. Long, dank, green weeds hung down over the entrance, like a wet curtain threatening to suck out all the life from within. Ancient markings, deeply etched, but with their edges worn smooth over the eons, adorned the walls on either side of the opening. The warriors drew up within 2 horse lengths of the entrance, their horses pawing the ground nervously.
What is this place?
This is known as the Lair of the Elements. It is said that spirits born from the earth, air, fire and water, forces of nature given life, dwell deep within. None know their true origin and nature. However, those that have studied certain ancient scriptures know they're also judges. It is written that the guilty are sent in there to have their spirits read and weighed to see if they are worthy of absolution. It's also written that none have come back out.
The knight paused to scan Arthur's face for signs of fear, for signs of weakness, and mostly for the signs of terror he hoped he was placing deep within Arthur's heart. Arthur sat impassively on his horse. Whatever was to happen from this moment on was unknown to him, but if he could somehow escape from this lair of the elements, there would be a reckoning.
You've proven hard to kill in the past. Yoden feels that this will not only ensure your death, but it will also show his loyalty to your more powerful enemies.
So, it's either possible death in there, or certain death out here. Well, I would rather face the unknown than be killed by the likes of you.
Arthur swung his leg over the saddle of his horse and slid to the ground, still in chains. They obviously weren't going to release him, so he turned to face that dark, gaping maw. Pleased that his sturdy stallion made no effort to shy away in fear, Arthur made his way between the dank, dripping fronds and into the cave. Droplets of slimy water dripped down the back of his hauberk, and despite himself, he shivered. He took a moment for his eyes to adjust to the dim green light that filtered in from the outside world, and started to walk into the tunnel, hoping against hope that he would find a way out, and a chance to return to his horse and rescue his friends. As he kept on walking down and down into the increasing darkness, The tunnel grew narrower and twisted to his left, and then to his right, until he had lost all sense of direction. Eventually, his heart began to lift with hope as he saw a ruddy glow ahead of him, and he hurried forward until he found himself stumbling over some loose rocks into a huge chamber, carved out of the living rock, deep underground. There was a column of ancient, rune-encrusted rock emerging from the middle of a dark pool in the centre of the chamber. At the top of the pillar, a flame danced this way and that, eternally vigilant, dancing in some unseen wind, or winds that Arthur could feel, lifting his hair gently about his face. The pool of water was so dark that, as far as he could tell, it could have been bottomless, and it strangely showed no reflection of the fire that danced above it. The water moved sluggishly about the base of the column with a life of its own. As he stood there, taking in the wonders before him, voices seemed to fill the chamber. Voices from nowhere in particular, but everywhere at once.
Who dares enter here?
It appears to be someone destined to be judged.
It has been so long since we have weighed someone's soul. Perhaps this will be the one who will survive my series.
Arthur looked all around himself, peering into the dim light, struggling to see if there were people in the shadows talking to themselves, or whether there were indeed spirits of some sort. He made a decision and stood up straight.
I am Arthur, and I do not fear you. Judge all you want, I will not cower or flee. I will endure whatever you throw at me.
Many have said the same as you have. None have been found worthy.
A deep rumbling started to fill the air, and amidst clouds of billowing dust, four strange and ancient beings started to manifest before Arthur. The first rose up from the very ground itself, head, arms and legs made of solid rock, grinding as it stood upright. The dust was caught in the centre of a whirling mass of air, spinning around at such speeds that the shape of a tall knight wielding a sword could be seen as clear and solid as any other knight as he strode towards Arthur. A lady arose from the pool and glided towards him, her very robe, shield and sword made from the dark water of the pool, and her eye sockets as deep and empty as the pool's limitless depths. With a bright flash, the flickering flame flared into life and formed the shape of a beautiful armoured woman standing in front of Arthur. Her hair a mass of blazing flame that waved and flickered down beside her. The wonder of the scene, breath from Arthur's body. He stood senseless as they surrounded him, closing in on him relentlessly. The ground itself grasped Arthur's feet and held him immobile as the rock giant pummeled him continually. The dust-filled air elemental swirled around him, chilling him to the marrow, while the Lady of Water was trying desperately to kiss Arthur's lips, but he thrashed his head to and fro, as he knew that to do so would be to invite a watery death. The beautiful woman, made of constantly shifting fire, sidled up to him and wrapped her long arms around him, searing not only his body, but his very soul, and all the while, their voices filled his head.
Give in.
And the pain will stop.
Every muscle strained, every sinew pulled tight, and every breath came in coarse rasps. His will pushed his body to its limits and beyond, past the point where an ordinary man would have given up. As the pressure increased, Arthur could feel his mind weakening, his willpower slipping, and he knew that he was close to giving in to these monstrous creatures, just as he knew that to do so could only end in a grisly death. As the pain increased and his vision was beginning to fade, he was suddenly flooded with a brief sense of peace. A sickening vision came with it, a final glimpse of the truth, a glimpse of what was to come before he gave in to the onrushing void. He could see a gloating Jodun, leaning over the Lady Boiron, tied as she was to a gilded chair.
Arthur died in the Cave of the Elements. His enemies will be certain of my loyalty now and are rushing to make alliances with me. As for you, my princess, I will use you to ensure my legacy.
I will do nothing to assist you. There is nothing you can do to make me.
Oh, but there is. I once considered using magic to ensure my immortality, but then I realized that the real way to live forever is through my progeny. And that's where you come in, my dear. You will give me a child of Fae that will ensure my name and bloodline lives on.
You would dare to insult the Fae? My father and his allies would kill you.
Oh, I don't think so. With Arthur's enemies standing beside me and my child in your womb, it'll be I that rises as Lord of Avalon. No one will be able to stand against me. Take her to her chambers for later. She and I have work to do.
Increasing waves of pain brought Arthur back to the present moment, swiftly dying in an elemental torment. But after what he had seen in his vision, all he could think about was the princess, the pale beauty of the Lady Boiron. He cared deeply for her from the moment he saw her all those months ago. He'd always been afraid to tell her his true feelings, but he would not let any harm come to her, no matter what the cost.
I was ready to welcome death, but with her in danger, I cannot allow it. This will now cease!
It is not up to you. Our judgment is not finished. Your spirit is still being made.
We can already feel your body weakening and your soul wanting.
These are not just physical bonds. Our powers bind your very being, and you are not strong enough to resist.
Oh, I think not!
The rocks burst apart into small pebbles as Arthur broke free of his shackles. The watery lady and the air warrior reformed and charged at him, but Arthur dodged their headlong rush, and the power of air blew the water lady back against the far cavern wall, both dispersing into a spray of water droplets and dust motes. He then focused his attention on the fiery face of the beautiful maiden who had him tightly bound in her flaming arms and took both of her wrists in his hands. The pain of his burning flesh caused him untold agony, and as he looked deeply into her eyes like hot coals, he said through gritted teeth,
"You will yield."
There was a silence as each of the elementals withdrew from Arthur and reformed in front of him. They looked at each other slowly with dawning understanding, and then bowed to Arthur.
We have waited many years for one with a spirit strong enough to survive our judgment. In your torment, you thought of another, which gave you the power to break free.
We always swore that we would forever serve the one found worthy. What would you have us do?
In one of the highest towers of Jodun's castle, Jodun was making plans in his war room. He was leaning over a table with a huge map spread on it, studying the arrangement of small blocks of wood, painted with heraldic devices. One of his stewards came bursting through the door, causing Jodun to accidentally scatter several of the units he was studying. He turned angrily to the man, who dropped to one knee. The steward blurted out,
"My lord Jodun, the knights are returning from the lair of the elements sooner than expected."
Growling, Jodun made his way to the castle's curtain wall and peered through an archer's station. He could see his men riding back to the castle at full tilt. Perhaps they were keen to deliver the news of Arthur's death to him. Perhaps. He turned to the steward and snatched a spyglass from the man, holding it up to his eye and steadying it on the wall. Confused, he could see the looks of terror and fear on their faces. Further behind them, he could see a great storm, lowering, just over their heads.
"There's nothing to fear. They're probably just trying to get past that terrible storm." "But my lord, the storm has just changed position to pursue them."
Unbelieving, Jodun looked again and saw that this impossible thing was indeed true. As he watched their headlong flight, the image in his spyglass began to become shaky. Checking that he was still firmly braced, he could see that it was the very ground itself that was heaving under their horses. A large crack appeared before them, and although they tried to leap over it, one of the riders could not hold onto his horse as it leapt and plummeted into the earthen moor as it closed behind them. A sudden lightning flash set fire to a tree right by them, and the fire leapt from the tree onto one of the other riders, who flared as brightly as a newly dipped torch. Horrified, Jodun continued to watch, as two of the remaining riders were plucked from their saddles by howling winds and sucked up into the dark clouds just above them, never to be seen again. The last knight, the leader of the warriors, had nearly gained the castle, and Jodun willed him to ride across the bridge lowered across the moat and into the safety of the castle's walls. The moat, however, seemed to come alive as one huge, fist-shaped wave reared up and swept the knight from his horse and over the edge of the bridge, pulling him to his death in its shadowy depths.
There's still one rider left. He's right in the middle of that storm.
Whipping the spyglass to his eye again, Jodun looked for the man and suddenly dropped the glass to the floor, recognition and disbelief crossing his face.
It's Arthur. He's alive. But how is this so? Why is that storm not affecting him?
Arthur raised his sword, lightning flashing from it in all directions, and the four elementals took shape within the angry grey clouds, speeding beside the rushing form of Arthur, obviously under his command. Arthur lowered the point of his sword and pointed it at the castle, and his horse seemed to have the very wind itself beneath its hooves as they thundered down towards the drawbridge.
He's not just surviving the storm, he's commanding it!
Jodun sought out the rider's face, and as their eyes locked, he could see a wave of pure fury wash over Arthur, hatred such as he had never encountered before.
How is this possible?
Unseen. The Lady Boiron had slipped silently past her guardians and joined Jodun on the battlements. She had stood there in the shadows and witnessed all that had occurred as the wind wrapped her tightly in her cloak. Her realization suddenly struck her, and she spun to face Jodun.
It is as the great prophecy has said. He will come with the storm which will bow before him to deliver justice. Don't you understand what this means? Don't you understand who it is?
Don't you dare say it. It can't be true. Those are just stories giving hope for the weak to cling to.
Yes. Tremble with fear at its meaning. For it is now clear who Arthur truly is. He's finally come as the legends foretold. The hero of Avalon has come to save us all from evil.
At that moment, the castle walls shook as the elementals broke upon the ancient stone, cracks zigzagging up from the base of the wall towards the battlements where they stood. The great cogs and chains that controlled the drawbridge and portcullis flew into the courtyard in many pieces, and Arthur continued his hell ride across the drawbridge. He shouted at the elemental forms at his sides.
Elementals! Free my friends! Leave Jodun to me!
He scanned the battlements then, until his eyes lit upon the faces of Jodun, the princess.
Jodun! Give me the princess and I may yet allow you to live.
Jodun, king by his own sly hand, heard the rage in Arthur's voice. But with the sudden realization that only comes to those that are used to manipulating others, knew that Arthur's true anger was not directed at him for throwing him into the lair of the elements, but for taking the princess captive. This man was in love with the Lady Boiron, the pale princess of the Dark Shee. Quickly, he grabbed hold of her and ran back into his chambers, his dagger pressed against her bodice.
You never told me his true feelings for you. I'll be lucky to survive this after he catches up.
What are you talking about? What true feelings? Arthur has shown no affection towards me.
I know the look of rage on a man's face when it comes from true love. I've killed enough husbands and sons to know it well.
Jodun instructed his guards to keep Arthur out and slammed the heavy door behind him, locking it firmly. Stunned, he listened helplessly as the sounds of death and pain echoed under the door, hoping against hope they belonged to Arthur. With a sudden crack, a mighty sword struck the timbers of the door and it began to splinter. There were several more blows, and a gap large enough to reveal Arthur stood there, covered in the blood of Jodun's men, his sword obviously still hungry for more. Jodun moved his blade up to the Lady Boiron's throat.
Take one more step and she dies, Allow me to leave with her and I'll let her go after I make my escape.
Arthur knew that he could not risk the life of his love. He knelt and dropped his sword to the ground. Two of Yoden's guards came forward from inside the chambers and held Arthur at sword point.
No wonder you never told your true feelings. I mean, a human falling for a fae, and a dark she-princess at that. Look at how easily her love, her champion, gives up.
I am not giving up. This is not the way I hoped she would find out about my love for her, and if you think I will let you leave with her, you are mistaken.
So, exactly what could you possibly do? The princess is helpless, and I will do what I wish to her. And you, you're under guard, and unarmed.
The princess is many things, to be sure, but helpless is certainly not one of them. I was just waiting for her to make her move.
As the sudden pain fled under his ribs, and Yoden realized that Boiron was no longer within his knife's range, he struggled to grasp what had happened. Through blood-fogged eyes, he saw her duck beneath his grasp, withdraw her thin dagger from inside his ribs, and kick him back down onto the floor. All in one movement, she completed her spin and replaced the dagger in its sheath hidden under her long embroidered sleeve. At the moment of the distraction, Arthur leapt forward to take his sword up again, and with a thrust, a parry followed by a riposte, his two guards lay crumpled at his feet. He walked to stand beside the Lady Boiron. Together they approached the wounded Yoden.
Please, allow me to live. I will do anything.
It is my will that you will be brought before the Fae Court and judged and imprisoned. While you don't deserve it, I say you should live out the rest of your dark days in the dungeon.
Yoden breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, thank you for sparing me. Your mercy knows no bounds.
Yes, I do have a lot of mercy left in me even now, and I would spare you. Unfortunately, this is not my decision. These are not my lands. The victim should decide the fate. What say you, my lady?
As future queen of the Dark She, I judge him here and now, and find him guilty, and sentence him to death at the hands of both mortal and fae, specifically by my blade and that of the hero of Avalon. You, Arthur.
Surprised, Arthur looked into the Lady Boiron's eyes, and after a brief meeting of souls, turned back to Yoden, his face hardening with grim determination.
You heard the lady.
Yoden cowered briefly. Together, they ended his miserable life. The Lady Boiron turned to face Arthur and looked up at his blood-stained face.
Why didn't you tell me how you truly felt?
I didn't feel worthy. Me being a human, I never thought you, a fae princess, could ever feel the same way.
Arthur staggered sideways briefly in pain, and realized that Boiron had just slapped his face. Slapped him very hard.
Ah, what was that for?
That was for being a fool. And this is for being my hero.
She pulled Arthur to her for a tight embrace and kissed him with a gentleness and passion that lit up both of their worlds. Cool was that? A super story filled with action from Zach. Thank you so much, Zach. Really kind of you.
Yes, I really loved it. Thank you so much, Zach. It was so much fun to act. And now I think it's time for some more music.
Oh yes, and I've got just the right piece.
What's that then?
Well, with lyrics written by the dearly loved and much missed Isaac Bonewits, have a listen to Leslie Fish with a wonderful song, Avalon is Risen.
Hail the day so long expected, when the gates are open wide. Magic's old and new collected have restored the ancient pride. Throughout fairies wide dominion, the trumpet swoop and soar. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more. stand in wonder as our visions come to pass. Old Earth Mother and God of Thunder, Huntress Weaver, join the dance. Swell the sound of joyous laughter, hear immortal voices roar. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more. Though some thought that all their hating had sent her beneath the waves, Avalon was only waiting, for her folk will not be slaves. Now the day of freedom's dawning brings them back forevermore. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more.
Hark, all ye in beds and bowers, and has come another time, ruling with a rod of flowers, giving us the bliss sublime.
Prayer and Freya now shall guide us, lead us, be our counselor. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more.
Listen, warriors of the old gods, as the wild hunt's horn does sound. All their work shall fall before us, and the evil ones be bound.
Raise the shield of bright Athena, swing the hammer of great Thor. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more.
Hear me now, H3 and Bandri, Brahman, Kolpi, Flamen, too. Priest and priestess, poet, Kodi, rune master and shaman true. All your faith is now rewarded, prophets of the ancient lore.
Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more.
Sailing through the void so deep and far, they will come with us unfailing, plant the seeds from star to star.
Hear our children's children's voices, join with those from days of yore. Avalon is risen, is risen, is risen. Avalon is risen to fall no more.
Leslie Fish with the title track to her album Avalon is Risen. The link to her website and contributor page can be found in the show notes.
Amazing song though, isn't it? I hadn't realised until we found it that the lyrics were written by Isaac Bonowitz, one of the founders of Anriacht Fein, or ADF, the famous American Druid Order.
I didn't realise he'd written them either, but we all miss him and the work he did. He had quite a big impact on you, didn't he?
Yes, he did. Ever since I read his book Real Magic as a teenager, a book to break moulds and preconceptions. Travel well, dear friend.
Yes, travel well. You're still very much missed.
Yeah. Do you know, now's the time we normally do a promo, and I've got a very special one for us in this show.
Oh, do you? What's that then?
Well, have you ever wondered what goes on at these colourful and fantastic fairy festivals you see advertised?
Oh, now I know what you're talking about.
Yes. Mm. Well, we're going to find out.
Yes, we are. This is the promo for the 2013 Magical Fairy Festival, which is happening in Findon, West Sussex, in the UK, on the 10th to 12th of May this year. And we're going to be there to make a special show to let you know what actually goes on at a fairy festival.
Yes, Yeah. We'll try and talk to the musicians, the performers, and some of the fairies that'll be there. So have a listen to the promo and find out more about the bands and the facilities available in this year's festival. The best yet.
Can you hear the magical festival fairies calling you?
Come and play with the fae at the Magical Fairy Festival 2013 in Findon, West Sussex, on the 10th, 11th and 12th of May.
This year's festival features many of the UK's most loved pagan folk and mystical bands, including Incubus Succubus, Serpentine, Flutatious and more. Also proud to present exclusive UK fairy performances by Demonia Nymphy from Greece and Pythia, featuring Emily Alice Ovenden from the Medieval Babes.
On-site camping, toilet facilities, drinking water and food stalls will be available, catering for most dietary requirements.
The Magical Fairy Festival 2013 on the 10th, 11th and 12th of May in Findon, West Sussex, UK.
For more info, please call 07845 438 340. That's 07845 438 340. Or visit www.magicalfestivals.co.uk.
Sponsored by The Celtic Myth Pod Show, The Dark Angel, and Magical Times Magazine. Well, it looks fairly amazing, doesn't it? I can't wait to put on my fairy dress and go meet some wonderful people. We'll get the show out to you as soon as we can, so you know what to expect. And you can see if you fancy coming along to next year's festival. I'm really grateful for a chance to have a chat with these amazing artists and capture some of that fantastic fairy ambience over the 3 days.
Me too. And something else that I'm grateful for.
What's that?
The tremendous love and support from you guys, our listeners.
Yes, not only have we been blessed by your prayers and positivity and all your healing wishes for our little Amelia, but we also received a donation from one of our Viking cousins in Norway.
That's true, we did. So we'd like to say a massive thank you to Birgir, and may your ship ever fly over the waves, my friend.
It's never easy to keep the show running, as it's just the two of us. And when something like this happens, it really helps keep us going.
Yeah.
And it makes us realise what a wonderful community we're part of.
Incredible. And how proud we are to be a part of this global clan. So from the bottom of our hearts, as the spring dawns here in the north,
and the richness of autumn settles with you in the south, we'd like to wish you many blessings and say...
Húlvár!
Check out the snow notes.
Snow notes? We've now got snow notes.
I think we need more sunshine. It's going to my
snow
head.
Snow notes, right? Snow notes. Okay.
Slivne.
Don't make me start giggling.
New teeth, new tongue, new brain.
New man.
Keeps laughing at me. I definitely that one's going up.
Bygones.
That was Leslie Fish. If you start saying fishisms, I'm throwing you out now. Check out the show notes for more details.
The show dotes?
What? What did I say now?
The show dotes.
Oh,
I'm doting on our snow notes.
Go away.
I'm going off away now. I'm in a little car now.
You've been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, available from CelticMythPodShow.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show and will stay tuned for the next episode. You can send us an email or some voice feedback to Gary and Ruth at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd like to say a special thank you to Coulan's Hounds, who provided us with the theme music for our show. You can find them at www.sfhounds.com.
We'd also like to say a massive thank you to Amrus, Kira, Celia, Dave the Bard, the Dolman, Keltoria, Kevin Skinner, Phil Thornton, S.J. Tucker, and Spiral Dance. All of these wonderful friends have given us unrestricted access to their music. More details about each of them can be found in the special Friends of the Show page on our website.
You'll find links to all of these wonderful artists in the show notes at shownotes.celticmythpodshow.com.